This Is Your Life, episode 27. This is your life. Are you who you wanna be? Hello and welcome to this episode of This Is Your Life. My name is Michael Hyatt, and this is the podcast dedicated to intentional leadership. My goal is to help you live with more passion, work with greater focus, and lead with extraordinary influence. In this episode, we'll be talking about how to say no without feeling guilty. If you're like me, you've got a tough time saying no. I want to be helpful to people, and I just hate disappointing them. I guess I'm a recovering people pleaser, but in this episode, I'm going to be sharing some practical strategies I've learned and am learning for saying no in a way that honors the person making the request and yet keeps me free to focus on what matters most. But first, this podcast is brought to you by Bluehost Web Hosting, the only web hosting service I personally recommend. Why? Because it's easy to use, reliable, and inexpensive. It's also the official top recommendation of WordPress itself. Not sure how to set it up? No problem. I've got a free step-by-step screencast. It's a tutorial that will walk you through the process of setting up your very own self-hosted WordPress blog. You don't have to have any technical expertise. I walk you through it click by click in 20 minutes or less. And you can find out more at michaelhyatt.com/WordPress setup. And on that page, I'll also provide you with a link to get a hosting account for only $3.95 a month, which is a special discount that Bluehost is offering to my readers. So let's talk about how to say no without feeling guilty. I don't know about you, but I have a hard time saying no. Perhaps you do too. I think it's more common than we sometimes think, especially for those who are empathetic or nurturing or just hate the thought of hurting somebody else's feelings. And for so many of us, we link saying no with disappointing people. I didn't really notice this problem in myself because for most of my career, I've had an assistant who said no for me. But if somebody had a request, they had to get through her first. And that gave me the buffer that I needed to consider the request more carefully. And so I just let her say no on my behalf. The fact is, I didn't have to deliver the bad news myself, and that is what kept me focused and productive. But when I left the corporate world about 18 months ago, everything changed for me. I didn't have an assistant for about 4 months. Oh my gosh, was it a difference? That meant all the requests came straight to me. For example, during this time, an acquaintance, someone I had met briefly at a conference, sent me an email which said this, quote, "I read your blog daily and follow you on Twitter. We met briefly after your speech in Dallas. I'm going to be in Nashville next week and would really like to meet with you. I'm in the middle of a personal crisis and could use your counsel. I know you're busy, but this is really important. It would mean the world if you could make time for me. Can I buy you breakfast, lunch, or just coffee to pick your brain?" End quote. You know, that's the worst kind of request because it's an appeal for help. And again, like I said, I want to be helpful. You probably do too. I ended up saying yes to this person and was kicking myself almost immediately. The lunch meeting ended up being a total waste of time. This person did not come prepared. In fact, when it was all said and done, I had no idea what he really wanted. The problem is I get several requests a day like this, and it would be a full-time job if I let it. Fortunately, I now have a great assistant, Trisha, to run interference for me, but I still occasionally struggle with this, particularly if the person making the request is a friend, somebody I know from another social context, or maybe somebody I just bump into in person. But regardless, I have now resolved to say no to everything unless there's a really, really compelling reason to say yes. In other words, I've switched my default response from yes to no. Why? Because there's just too much at stake. If you and I don't get better at saying no, here's what we risk. And I just jotted this list down. First of all, we risk other people's priorities taking precedence over ours. Second thing we risk, mere acquaintances, people we barely know, like the example I just gave, crowding out our time with family and close friends. And that's happened to me on more than one occasion where I ended up forfeiting family time for somebody I barely knew. And those aren't the priorities that I believe in, and I don't know why I let myself get caught in that, but I did. Another thing we risk is that we don't have the time we need for rest and recovery. And the older I get, the more I realize how important this is to be able to surge and then to retreat and rest and to surge, retreat and rest and kind of have that cycle going. But if we're surging all the time, that is a recipe for burnout. Another reason is we'll end up frustrated and stressed. I mean, it's just too many plates spinning, too many people trying to help, too many balls in the air. Another thing we risk is that we won't be able to say yes to the really important things. And this is the most important one of all to me, is I do want to say yes to the things that matter the most, and that of necessity. In a world of limited resources where my time is finite, of necessity, that means I've got to say no to the lesser things. And unfortunately, for some people, those are really important things for them, but they're not really important for me. And this last one was really a clincher for me. Every time I say no to something that's not important, I'm saying yes to something that is. And by the way, if you think that somehow this is unspiritual, think how many times Jesus said no, either explicitly or implicitly, so that he could stay focused on his Father's business. And if you want further proof of that, look in John chapter 11, verses 5 and 6, just for one example. I recently heard Andy Stanley talking about this on his leadership podcast. And here's what he said, quote, "The harsh reality of leadership is the more successful we are, the less accessible we become. All things grow, and as more people become involved, a leader can't be equally accessible to all people. So then we are faced with the dilemma of who gets my time and who doesn't. When do they get it, and how much of it do they get?" End quote. Here's the deal. Your time and my time is a zero-sum game. When you say yes to one thing, you are simultaneously saying no to something else. The more successful you get, the more successful I become, the more difficult this becomes. You find yourself saying no to really good things, worthy things, in order to say yes to your most important priorities. For example, last week I spoke at a writer's conference, and after my speech, at least a dozen people handed me their book proposal or manuscript and asked if I would read it and tell them what I think. And I love helping authors. I have a heart, especially for authors, because of all the years, the decades really, that I spent in the publishing business. There was a time when I would have felt guilty about saying no to those aspiring, hopeful authors. After all, from the perspective of the one asking, it's not a big request. What they usually don't realize is that I get dozens of these requests each week, and to agree to their request would require a major investment of my time. Add all the requests together, and I'm soon eating into the time allotted for my own projects, my friends, my family, and even my own health. So as a result, I had to say to each one, "I'm sorry, but I'm afraid that won't be possible. In order to be faithful to my other commitments, I have to say no to these kinds of requests. I hope you understand." And the truth is, most people do understand. They may be disappointed, but they understand. They get over it. They go on with their life and they figure out another solution. And if they don't, I mean, I'm not trying to be callous or hard-hearted, but I've got things that I have to accomplish that are important as well. And I want to be helpful within the limits of my time and other resources, but I've got to give attention to my calling and what I believe I'm supposed to be doing if I'm going to be faithful and if I'm going to be successful and if I'm going to not have regrets at the end of my life. So in the remainder of this episode, I want to share with you 8 practical suggestions for saying no without feeling guilty. I don't want you to feel guilty at the end of this process. I don't want to feel guilty. I just want to be helpful to people to the extent I can, but still be able to say no when I need to and stay focused on what I need to stay focused on. So 8 suggestions. Number 1, acknowledge your resources are finite. This is a fact. You've got 168 hours per week, no more, no less. And every time you commit to something, you're depleting your available reserve of time. Your other resources are also limited, including your attention, your money, and your energy. And if you ignore this, it'll eventually catch up with you. And I've seen this happen. You may have experienced it, but you pay a high price when this happens. Perhaps an emotional breakdown, a divorce, wayward kids, a business failure, or a health crisis. And I don't want that, and you don't want that. And so where it starts is laying this foundation, first suggestion, acknowledging that your resources are finite. You know, God's God, and you're not. Number 2, determine who needs access to you and who doesn't. Now, this sounds a little bit harsh, but it's necessary. Not everyone needs full access to you. I mean, you think of all the social networks that you're involved in, the different things that you do at work. I don't know what the nature of your job is. Maybe you don't have that many contacts to maintain. Maybe you do. But not everyone needs full access to you. They may think they do, but they don't. Therefore, you must prioritize your contacts and your relationships. And for me, my family, and by the way, there's 17 of us now in my family with my 5 daughters, 4 sons-in-law, and then 7 grandchildren with 1 on the way. So 17 altogether. But for me, it's my family, the people I work with daily, and my close personal friends that constitute my inner circle. Who is in your inner circle? Have you ever even thought about that? Have you identified the people that need full access and the people that don't need full access? These people in the inner circle are the people that get my time first. And remember, once you let people in, it's hard to ask them to leave without creating misunderstanding or hurt feelings. You've got to be intentional. I remember one time when I was trying to convert my Facebook friend page or my profile page over to a fan page because I was just getting too many people asking for me to friend them, I unfriended somebody at church. And oh my gosh, it really hurt her feelings. And she talked to me about it. And I just, you know, I hated that for her. And I, you know, it's just reality. But I'm just saying it's difficult to unfriend somebody, to ask them to leave your inner circle. So be very careful about who you let in. Now, I want to say also that the people I let in, I give 100% of myself to. I want them to have full access. And I want them to be able to rely on me as a husband and as a father and as a family member, as a friend, all the rest. But I can only do that if I limit the access. Third suggestion is take practical steps to limit your accessibility. And this is where the rubber meets the road. For example, I use 2 email addresses, a private one and a public one. And I monitor the first, the private one, and my assistant monitors the second one. And only about 30 people in the world have access to my private address. If something hits my public account and it requires my personal response, my assistant redirects it to my private account. And by the way, Apple Mail, the installed free package that comes with every Mac, has a redirect function. And this may be available in other software packages, I don't know. But it's really cool because it enables her to redirect that email to me, and it looks like it came directly to me and wasn't forwarded to me, and I can just respond from that account. So it's great. Also, I follow a limited number of people on Twitter, about right now, I think less than 200, but these are the only ones who can direct message me, and it keeps me from getting flooded with spam. And so I would urge you to think intentionally about the number of people that you follow in these different social networks, and don't create a situation that's going to ultimately overwhelm you. I didn't do that. I wasn't very discerning or discriminating. I followed everybody that followed me, and eventually it caught up with me, and I was getting hammered with spam on my Twitter account via direct messaging, and I unfollowed more than 100,000 people in one fell swoop. Well, actually, it took about 4 days of automated unfollowing, but it was brutal. I mean, it really took a long time. So I also have a private Facebook profile and a public fan page. And the first one is for my inner circle and a few others. The fan page is for everyone else. And the thing I love about the fan page, relatively speaking, I'm not a huge fan of Facebook, but regardless, one of the things I like is that I don't have to decide who gets to like me on my fan page. They can do that on their own. It doesn't require my intervention like a profile page when I have to accept somebody's request to be my friend. So my accessibility on Facebook is almost identical to my access on Twitter. Now, I've also got LinkedIn, Google+, and Pinterest accounts, but I treat those as if they were public accounts. I don't even try to respond to private messages, and I tell people pretty transparently there that I don't respond to individual messages on those accounts, that if they really want to get in touch with me, then they need to email me or they need to respond publicly on Twitter. I also have 2 numbers, and you guessed it, surprise, a private one and a public one. And I use Google Voice for my public number, and it goes directly to voicemail, transcribes the message, then it emails it to my assistant. And, you know, honestly, Google Voice transcription is not great, but it's enough that you can figure out what the message is. And if you need to, you can call the message and actually listen to the replay. But if it's something requiring my personal attention, which is rare, Tricia forwards it to me, forwards the notification to me so that I can follow up by phone. So the third practical recommendation or suggestion I have is take practical steps to limit your accessibility. Number four, make a list of common requests. This was a game changer for me. Go through all your email over the last few months and compile a list of recurring requests or comments. And you'll find that they fall into specific categories. I mean, there's a finite number of requests that people make of you, is my guess. And here's a short sample of some of the categories and the requests that I had when I went through this exercise a few years ago and when I updated it a few months ago. This was a category called meetings. The request typically runs like this. Can I meet with you over coffee or a meal? Another request, can I get together with you to pick your brain? Or another request, can I schedule a call with you to discuss my service or my product? So those are three different kinds of requests, all under the heading of meetings. Another heading, consulting, coaching, or mentoring. People write to me and they ask, would you take a look at my blog and tell me what you think? Get a couple of those, by the way, every day. Or somebody writes and they said, would you consider mentoring me? And I've been very public about the mentoring group that I have with eight young men, which has been fantastic, but I have limited capacity there, but I still get these requests. Another one, would you consider coaching me? Or just, can you answer a question? And they'll just ask whatever question they want to ask. So those are other kinds of requests that I get. Another category, and I'm not going to give you these all of these, but I'm just giving you some that are representative. Another category is what I call boards or investing, and they're requests that run like this. Would you consider serving on our board? Or would you consider investing in my company? So again, this is just a sample, but currently I've identified about 50 common requests. And the first step here is to really identify these common requests, and you'll see why here in just a moment. But that comes or leads us to number five, which is to adopt a strategy for responding to these requests. Now, this is where we get into the nitty-gritty. It's critical because most of us aren't as intentional about our responses as we should be. And we find ourselves in a reactive mode too often, caught flat-footed. Somebody makes a request, and who knows how we'll respond. We find ourselves continuing to reinvent the wheel, and it's left too much up to how we feel that day rather than something that is really thoughtful, something that is really intentional, and something that ultimately serves the priorities that we've set for ourselves. Well, recently I read a very, very good book on this subject at the recommendation of Mary DeMuth, and it's called The Power of a Positive No. It's by Harvard professor William Ury. And in the introduction to the book, he explains there are three different responses to someone who asks us to do something we don't want to do. So the first kind of response or strategy is accommodation. And this is when we say yes, when we really want to say no. You been there? This usually comes when we value the relationship of the person making the request above the importance of our own interests. A second strategy that we sometimes employ is the strategy of attack. And this is when we say no poorly. And this is a result of valuing our own interests above the importance of the relationship. So just the reverse of accommodation. And sometimes we're fearful or we're resentful of the request and we overreact to the person doing the asking. And the third strategy is one of avoidance. This is when we say nothing at all because we're afraid of offending the other party. We say nothing. We're hoping the problem will go away. So we don't return the phone call. We don't respond to the email message. Because we know in our hearts we want to say no, but we don't have the guts to do it, so we just avoid it, and it doesn't go away. It rarely does. So sometimes these responses will spill over into one another, making a difficult situation worse. And see if this sounds familiar. We initially avoid the request, prompting a second or a third request, and then we get annoyed with the person, and we attack the one making the request, which leads to guilt, perhaps an apology, and then accommodation. Well, these three strategies are really unsatisfactory. I mean, none of these work. There's got to be a better way, one that both values your own interests and yet honors the one making the request. I call this the strategy of affirmation, just to keep the alliteration consistent with accommodation, attack, and avoidance. Dr. Ury calls it the strategy of a positive no. And his formula uses a yes, no, yes response. In contrast to the ordinary no, which begins with a no and ends with a no, a positive no, according to Dr. Ury, begins with a yes and ends with a yes. And it has three parts. Yes, it begins by saying yes to yourself and protecting what is important to you. And I would also add the importance of affirming the other person. Then it moves from that yes to a no, and it continues with a matter-of-fact no that sets clear boundaries. I also avoid leaving the door open by saying maybe, as in, well, maybe I can say yes to your request in the future. That builds in its own set of troubles. So it's a yes, a no, and then a final yes, which is a positive no that ends with a yes that affirms the relationship and offers another solution to the person's request. So for example, aspiring authors often email me, as I said earlier, asking that I review their book proposal. If I'm at a conference, they'll ask me individually. And so here's the kind of thing that I would say using Dr. Urey's yes, no, yes formula. And assume for a moment this is an email request from somebody named Bill. I would just say, Bill, congratulations on your new proposal. Very few authors make it this far. Thanks for your interest in having me review it. So right there, I've affirmed him. I've tried to start on a positive note. And then I say, unfortunately, due to my other commitments, I am no longer able to review proposals individually. Therefore, I must decline. So I've said very firmly, no, I can't meet your request. And then I say, however, I can give you some guidance on how to get published. If you haven't already done so, may I recommend that you start by reading my blog post, Advice for First-Time Authors, and I have a hyperlink to that post on my blog. In it, I offer step-by-step instructions for what to do first. I also have just published an entire audio course called Get Published, which distills my 30-plus years of publishing experience into 21 learning sessions. You can read about it here, and again, another hyperlink to that page on my website. I hope you will find this helpful. Thank you, Michael. Interestingly, I rarely have anyone pressure me after receiving an email like this. You know, I've affirmed them, I've said no, and I've given them an alternative. And they typically respond by saying, wow, thanks for your consideration. I certainly understand. Thanks for getting back to me. So I think according to this fifth step, we have to adopt a strategy for responding to the requests. And the strategy I'm recommending is the one of affirmation, where we use this yes, no, yes formula. The sixth suggestion I would make is that you use email templates to say no with grace. This also is a game changer. This will make so much difference in your life if you implement it. But here's the idea. You take time to craft a written response to each of your most common requests. So you're going to do this well one time, and then you're going to reuse it. You literally write out the response using the yes, no, yes formula. Then, and get this, you save your response as an email signature. You know, email signatures don't just have to be for signatures. They can be for any kind of repetitive text, even including entire paragraphs or entire email messages. So you can save your response as an email signature, or if you want to use something like Typinator, which I also have on my Mac, and I use it for other purposes. There are a lot of those different kinds of programs out there that are essentially macro programs that when you type some kind of abbreviation, it expands into the full message. But whatever your preference is, the idea is to create this message one time and then to automate it. But it's a huge, huge time saver. Plus, honestly, it takes some of the pain out of saying no. It enables you to decline with grace without going through the angst with each new request. And this is especially important for people pleasers like me, maybe you, who hate saying no. Now, I've posted those email templates, the ones that I'm currently using, online in a post called Using Email Templates to Say No with Grace. And I've got a link in the show notes. This is something that Tricia and I update as the need arises, but it hasn't changed a lot over the last 2 years because the requests, frankly, haven't changed a lot. And I took time to do it right the first time. But I've got an email signature for every one of these common requests. Tricia manages and uses them on my behalf. I occasionally use them too, but it's a great tool for training people who work for you so they can respond as you would like to respond if only you had the time. So that's my sixth suggestion, is to use email templates to say no with grace. Number seven is to delegate to people you trust. You don't have to do it all. If you're like me, you may say yes, but then regret it. However, if you can have someone on your team act as a buffer, boy, does it help. And that gives you the space you need to be more thoughtful and priority driven in your decisions. And in addition, people on your team are often better equipped to help the person making the request, or at the very least, they can point them to the resources they need without your involvement. Either way, the person making the request is well served. This is also a great opportunity, by the way, to train your people by allowing them to shoulder the load and help them get a sense that they're moving up in your organization or moving along in their career. I remember in the Old Testament, Jethro, Moses' father-in-law, once told him, he said, quote, "The thing that you do is not good," because, you know, Moses was trying to be at every meeting, trying to be involved in all the decisions, trying to judge the entire nation of Israel with every dispute that came up. And Moses' father-in-law, Jethro, said to him, "The thing that you do is not good. Both you and these people who are with you will surely wear themselves out, for this thing is too much for you, and you are not able to perform it by yourself." Exodus 18, 17 and 18. That's a marvelous chapter to read, by the way, to understand the solution that Jethro proposes. And it's really kind of modern management theory given thousands of years ago. The eighth suggestion that I would make is to accept the fact that you're going to be misunderstood. I wish this weren't the case. I don't like to be misunderstood. I like for people to think well of me, but that's not always possible. People often feel entitled. Some will try to shame you. Others will talk about you behind your back, but don't worry about it. There's nothing you can do to stop them. These are just some of the things that other people won't understand until they've walked in your shoes. And trying to convince them otherwise only further depletes your limited resources and gets you off track. So my best advice is just to ignore them the best you can. So just in conclusion, if this is a struggle for you, that's a good sign. It means you have a good heart, and you never want to lose that. But it's going to take more than a good heart to succeed over the long haul. You're also going to need wisdom and the courage, frankly, to say no in order to stay focused on your priorities and fulfill your calling. So with that, let's go to a few listener questions. The first one comes from Kevin. Kevin, take it away.
Hi, Michael. This is Kevin Quinley from Chesterfield, Virginia, and I blog at my website, claimscoach.com. My question is, how do you say no without coming across as a prima donna or doing something career-limiting, like saying no to the boss or a key customer? How do you draw that line? Thanks a lot.
Thanks, Kevin. I think I covered the first part of that, the prima donna part of it, just in my recommendations, and that is to pre-think this and, you know, be humble and try to be helpful. I think that covers the jerk part of it. And if it doesn't, again, there's not probably much you can do about it. The career limiting part of this is more difficult because you have to discern what's really going on and whether or not this is going to advance your career or whether or not it serves the purposes to which you're called. I even face this now as a solopreneur. I don't want to say no to someone or something that could help me later. So I have to dig down deep and I have to ask if this is helping me get where I want to go or if it's not, if it's a diversion or if it's a stepping stone to where I'm trying to go. And sometimes maybe we've just lost our focus on the ultimate goal. And if you understood the request, in light of that, you would happily say yes. I got a request the other day for a speaking engagement, and they were offering no pay, and it was going to be a hassle to do. And as I began to consider it, I almost said no to this just out of kind of my natural reaction right now. But then I thought, actually, this does serve one of my purposes because I can get some great video, and I'm always trying to get great video of me speaking so that I can enhance my demo reel. So I said, yeah, you know, I don't have to resent this. I don't even have to say no. I can do it, and it will serve my purposes and will serve their purposes as well. The next question comes from my friend, Michelle.
Hi, Michael. This is Michelle Cachat, and I blog at michellecachat.com. When I say no, which is hard to do, I usually feel kind of a compulsion to give a long 3-point explanation of why I need to say a no. Is it important to give that kind of explanation for any no answers that you give, or is it better just to say no and leave it be? Thanks for your help.
Michelle, in a word, no. You know, in fact, I think it's harmful to give a long explanation because then you might find yourself in a debate with somebody or trying to defend your various points. I think your no should be sufficient and people should learn that your no is sufficient. Let your yes be yes and your no be no, Jesus said. But I typically respond with something this simple. I'm sorry, but I have another commitment at that time. Or I'm sorry, but in order to be faithful to my other commitments, I'll have to say no. And I don't go into those other commitments because this is not about evaluating whether or not my priorities are right or whether or not their request has a higher priority or should have a higher priority than my existing ones. So I make it kind of ambiguous. And honestly, I rarely ever get pushback on this. I think people feel better about it. I feel better about it. You know, we just kind of cut to the chase and get it over with and get on to it. Michelle asked a second question, and I took off the first part of it because she recites her website. Again, I think she was probably thinking I would use one or the other, but they were both so good that I also had the second question queued up here as well. Take it away, Michelle.
I have long struggled with saying no, but I've worked on it and I think I'm getting better at it. However, I still struggle on the occasion when I run into someone who isn't really respecting my boundary. I've said no, but they're working very hard to try to convert me to a yes. How do you maintain your resolve when dealing with someone that's kind of pushy like that without being rude? Thanks ahead of time for your help.
Yeah, this is tough because it's annoying. And frankly, I don't like the person I have to become in these situations to deal with somebody else who can't take no for an answer. You know, it's just probably my own psychology and my own working through this. But I had it happen just the other day. I was in a restaurant meeting with a young man who was having a crisis in his marriage. And we were involved in a very intimate, very personal discussion. And we probably shouldn't have been in a restaurant, but we were. And this guy comes up, interrupts us, acknowledges that he interrupts us, but rather than asking for permission, just proceeds to, you know, gun away. And he told me that he wanted to see if I would be available for some consulting. And in fact, could I come over to his office as soon as I finished with that appointment? And I said, and I was frankly a little irritated that he interrupted us and was so insensitive in the situation. So I said, no, the best way to do this is to send me an email and I'll have my assistant respond. Well, he kept pressing. And, you know, honestly, that just made me even more resolved. I appreciated it even less. And so I just was firm. You know, I wasn't belligerent. I wasn't angry, but I just looked him straight in the eye and I said, no, that won't be possible. The best thing to do is to send an email to my assistant. And then I gave him my email address. Well, eventually people will figure it out. And if they don't, you absolutely shouldn't feel guilty. You know, this is their problem, not yours. They need to learn to take no for an answer and respect boundaries. But I'll tell you this, you've got to enforce the boundaries. This is critically important. And I'm sure you've read this book, but if you haven't, it's worth reading the book Boundaries by Henry Cloud and John Townsend. And if you've read it, reread it again, because I think they put it in a proper and healthy psychological perspective. But it's up to you really to establish the boundaries and then to enforce them. And if you get run over, it's worth asking yourself the question, what is it about the way that I'm responding that is making people feel that they've got permission to run all over me like this? It's not healthy. It's not healthy for them because they're going to be doing it with other people, and it's not healthy for you. And the sooner they can learn the lesson, the better both of you will be. So the question I'd have for you with this episode is, do you struggle with saying no? And how are you dealing with it? And if you'd like to comment on this episode, and I'd love to hear from you, go to my blog at michaelhyatt.com/027, as in episode 27, michaelhyatt.com/027. There'll be a link in the show notes, but I would love to hear from you. I've got just a few announcements for this episode. I'm excited to announce the publication of my brand new audio course entitled Everything You Need to Know to Get Published. If you've ever thought about writing a book but didn't know where to start, this course is for you. Or if you've already written a book but want to do everything you can to make the biggest splash you can in the marketplace, this course is for you. This course includes everything I've learned about publishing in my 30 years in the industry as a publisher, most recently the CEO of Thomas Nelson, a literary agent, and a two-time New York Times bestselling author. And I've distilled all of this into 21 very practical audio sessions along with a workbook. Now, the special introductory offer ended last week. I announced this last week, a special offer for my podcast listeners and for my blog readers. That's over, but you can still get it for $100 off and 4 free bonuses worth more than $150. How long are we going to run that special? I don't know. No promises there. It could end next week, but right now you can get it for $100 off. And again, the 4 free bonuses worth more than $150. You can find out more at michaelhyatt.com/get published. Second announcement, I've got 3 speaking events this week in the Atlanta area. And if you live there, I hope you can come out. I'd love to meet you and shake your hand. But I'll be speaking at Catalyst Atlanta tomorrow, and I'll be leading one of the labs on the topic of platform get noticed in a noisy world, which is also the title of my new book. On Thursday, I'm going to be speaking at My Healthy Church Luncheon, also in Atlanta, in conjunction with the Catalyst Conference. But I'm going to be speaking there on the topic of my podcast, last week, Shift, Leading Well in Turbulent Times, and I'll be applying it to the world of ministry. And then on Thursday evening, I'll give the keynote at the Savvy Blogging Summit in Atlanta, again on the topic of platform. And then I'm going to be doing a workshop on Friday, and I love doing this particular workshop. I've done it a couple of times, but it's called 7 Keys to Writing a Killer Blog Post. So that's about it for this episode of This Is Your Life. I would be so grateful if you would rate my podcast on iTunes. That helps tremendously with keeping my podcast visible so people who have never heard of it can discover it. And if you'd like to comment on this episode, please go to michaelhyatt.com. Go to the show notes for this episode and scroll down to the comments section. I'd love to hear from you. Comment, question, whatever. But until next time, remember, your life is a gift. Now go make it count. This is your life. Are you who you want to be? This is your life. Are you who you want to be?